Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better. Even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing.
And make your business sizzle.
Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing. Online marketing. Social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business? Hey, peeps, I'm super excited. Today, we're going to be talking about leveraging your knowledge, leveraging your influence. And we're going to be talking with Jack Humphrey from The Leveragists. Hey, Jack, man, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So this whole thing is kind of really about leverage because we met at an event down in Atlanta called NAMS. And so we connected up online and, you said, hey, man, I want to talk to you about leveraging. And I said, dude, this is perfect. So what I'd like to do is start off with a little bit of your backstory. Can you tell me where you started? You know, were you a shoe salesman? What'd you do? And then how'd you get to be this incredible marketing consultant?
I always like to start right after my I got fired as a shoe salesman. Is that okay?
That's fine, dude.
Okay. So after I got fired as a shoe salesman, actually I started after college. I went to Ball State and I started in I got a degree in radio and TV. And the girl I was with at the time wanted to do her internship for law in Washington, D.C., one of the great epicenters of media, which is not where you go to start once you've graduated with a bachelor's degree in radio and TV. You'll never get hired for anything there. You can't even carry somebody's donuts. A 54-year-old guy worked his way all his life up to that job. You're carrying people's, being a key grip and stuff in that market. You start out in the farm fields. So I, needless to say, did not get a job in D.C. at what I got at my degree and took out all those loans for. And I cut off all my hair and I carried my briefcase. My dad gave me his salesman briefcase, and I think it still had a copy of Zig Ziglar's book in it. And and I put on a tie, and I thought I had to do all that stuff because that's growing up time. Get out of college, that's what you do. And I ended up in Greenpeace. I ended up starting to answer any ads I could because now I'm in Alexandria, Virginia, and I'm freaking out. It's expensive there, and just like stuff you didn't have to worry about in college, and all of it takes money. So I started answering anything. I walk in with my briefcase and my button-down shirt, my tie, and my cut hair, and everybody turns around and looks at me, and they all look just like I did a week before. Long hair, Birkenstocks, everything else, and they're looking at me like I'm a square or whatever you would say, and I'm like, I'm not, I was you last week, I was you. But I started off in environmental stuff, and I stuck. I never did actually go into radio and TV, and for 11 years I went up the ranks in different organizations. I moved to New Mexico and became the executive director of a couple of environmental organizations, and one of which we raised money by bringing people from the Sierra Club and other types of groups would pay a few $1,000s to come to New Mexico and help us rip out roads in New Mexico and Arizona in the Forest Service land, where the Forest Service gets illegal roads people do with 4x4s and stuff, and it really is damaging to wildlife. So we volunteered for the Forest Service. If you tell us which roads you don't want to have that are illegal, we'll bring a team of people in here and decommission these things. We'll put logs over them and tear the tracks up and loosen the ground back up so you can't be there anymore. And they're like, great. So we used it as a training environment. We got the labor from New York and LA city slicker environmentalists would come flying in, and the draw was, after they did their work, was we'd teach them how to do things like tracking. So I brought in a world-renowned tracker the first year, and I learned how to become a better wildlife tracker. And it was really, really neat. That was the education component, and I became a pretty good tracker. You can drop me off in the middle of any wilderness. I'd prefer it if you would with a knife, but I don't even need a knife, and I'll be okay. And I'll get out, and I'll live. And so that was the perk. They wanted to come down and learn how to track mountain lions and black bears and and get out in the wilderness and learn cool stuff. And so that went great for many years, and then I got burnt out. 11 years is quite a long time in the nonprofit world, and there's no money in it, and it's also kind of stressful because you're really so deeply, passionately tied to the thing that you love that you're trying to save, and, you know, a couple forest fires and some laws that were passed and everything, you start to get burnt out and, like, really sad all the time. So it was time for me to move on. I started figuring out in 1998, the internet and everything, and I know I'm a little bit of a latecomer to some people, but 98 is when I started, so did Google, and I was one of the first three people in the U.S. that, or in the world, there was a guy in Russia and a guy in Canada and me who figured out the first Google algorithm. Now, that was not a big deal. The Google algorithm didn't have 270 points of ranking factors in it back then. It was quite simple. It was whoever had the most links wins. Literally, there were no qualifications. There were no good links, bad links. It was just literally, if I had 1,000 links and you had 1,001, you got to be number one and I got to be number two in Google. But I still get to say I cracked the first Google algorithm, so I'm going to stick with that. And it led to, I was in the Warrior Forum and all that, and I led to Power Linking being released, my first book in 2002. Now, I wasn't a geek like the other two guys. I wasn't a data. I was a crunchy hippie dude from the woods and teaching people how to track. And I used my tracking background to backtrack people's success. And I say all of that just to say that my entire life on the web and everything has been dedicated to watching how successful people do stuff and reverse engineering it. And doing it in the way that only I know how. Everybody leaves tracks on the internet. Well, and it's the same as in the sand out in the desert. They leave tracks, and success leaves tracks. And I learned how to do that because I couldn't do anything else. I didn't have a technical background whatsoever, and it was the only way I could look at the web. And it was a wonderful blessing because I got to see the web, and I continue to see the web in a way that most people don't even care to. It's not like anybody strives to see it the way I do, but it is very beneficial for me in my line of work because I can rip things apart really, really quickly by looking at them and get right down to the essence of why this works and why that doesn't work and what I should test next or how I should work with clients in their industry based on, you know, now decades of experience, but just my unique way of looking at things. And the thread that runs through all of this stuff is leverage. Because I learned from mountain lions and I learned from bears that they will take every opportunity to shorten the distance between two points. It's the wild, and nobody cares if you're alive in the morning or not, or if your cubs are alive in the morning. So if you figure out a quicker, easier way to get a deer in your belly through ambush tactics or through anything else that you would use as a mountain lion, that's all fair game. And so that's never surprised me. When I came online, I learned how to do that. In the wild, and I'm like, this probably would work here. I hope it does, because it's the only experience I've got, so I hope this works. And it does. It really works to always be looking to the highest points of leverage you can possibly find to get really where you're going as quickly as possible. So that's kind of the background, and that's where we ended up. I've written several books. Bending the Web was my last more famous one. And The Amazing Traffic Vortex, and the one that started this kind of series with this was The Authority Black Book, which was downloaded 50,000 some odd times in 2007, 2008, resulting in a $750,000. I haven't had $1 million day yet, but I have had a $750,000 day. So that was really cool, just from building from a free book and all the leverage tactics that I used with that to the following fall, resulting in such a big sale. So I think that sort of quickly brings us up to the present.
Yeah, that's quite the story, dude. So so you've learned to leverage nature. You've learned to leverage the internet. So I got two questions for you. The first one, don't answer. How much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? And the second question, which I do want you to answer, is how do the leveragists leverage leverage?
Ooh, compound leverage. That's what you're speaking of. Yes, I love it. So you started. So you're thinking like a leverageist. You're starting with the highest point of the high. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can stack leverage. You can stack it in so many ways. So like, let's just take our story, you and me. Mm-hmm. We met at, I think we, yeah, it was a NAMS event, right? And we started to understand, hey, you got a book, I got a book, you got an audience, I've got an audience, let's get on each other's podcasts, let's do this, let's do that. That's linear leverage. That's, basic networking 101. So we've accomplished that. But as we develop our relationship, we also get to know who knows other people. You get to know my people, I get to know your people. You start to see a triangulation, because I pay more attention to you on Facebook than I do people that I haven't met at events and haven't made a connection with and haven't networked with at all. And therefore, I get to see your stuff more. It's algorithmically actually that way, because Facebook, shows you who you've been paying the most attention to anyway, and it drops everybody else off. So that's actually a leverage tool in a sense, and that's the way a leveragist ought to think as well, outside and separate from Facebook. And that's really kind of just how the world works. You pay attention to the people who have the most impact in your life and the most impact that you've had on theirs. They're going to come back to you and go, hey, that was really great. So when you do the compound stuff, we start to find out what we can do with each other and with each other's people. So that would be some of the next steps that we've taken, but we can take even further with you and me. You know, I was working with this person. Actually, before this started, the conversation started, hey, who's doing what, who's so-and-so, blah, 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 and finding out what we're, kind of quickly catching up, like we did, how you been since we met last, and who you working with, what you doing, all that kind of stuff. So, again, still basic networking, basic leverage, but it starts to compound when you're starting to kind of wave your little magic leverage wand around the web and go, you know who you should talk to, and you know who you should talk to, and you start to put people together that isn't just you, because now you're developing a portfolio of friends, powerful friends with big audiences. And a big audience is not just 150,000 people. A big audience is 500 really hardcore dedicated buyers. So I'm not looking for people that have a 300,000 person list or a million person list, just as it, that might be a data point, but that's not the whole thing. I want to know how well engaged they are with their people and their people with them. And that's really the only metric I care about. And I can go down to 250 even, or whatever, as long as they're super mega engaged people. So I look for engagers, and everybody's starting to learn. Alex Mandozian and people are having really big launches and things around products that are teaching people how important it is to do networking. But networking is one thing and leverage is another. It's knowing what to do when you have a relationship. It's knowing how to help people, how to use leverage to help people, and then not just to help yourself. So that's when you start getting into compound leverage, leveraging leverage in a way that really starts to make things go really quickly for you and your business and other people who you're associated with. You become known for being able to get things done for people, to be able to connect people with things. And people then start to seek you out. Now you don't even have to work even the little bit that you have to do as a leveragist to go out and meet people. Once you've done that and you've really got some relationships and some things going, some projects going, it starts to snowball and people just start coming to you. And then you just sit there to receive all the greatness that comes your way.
Yeah, see, I love that. Basically, what you're talking about is the law of reciprocity. And so since we went high level first, which I normally save that towards the end, but I wanted to jump off on that bandwagon because I wanted people to see the big picture. Now let's scale it way down and let's look at, okay, here's a local guy and he runs a, let's call it HVAC business in Batavia, Illinois. And he wants to learn how to leverage his business himself within the local community to help grow his businesses. What is some of the things that you suggest that people look at or do to help them maximize the value of that?
Well, a lot of people will look at themselves and their business, and they'll check out the lay of the land from their position, which is a totally natural thing to do. I'm an HVAC professional. I do this thing. I provide this service. And I might even have a little bit of an idea of, do I do industrial stuff? Do I do residential? Do I just do restaurants? Do I do a mixture of things? And everybody looks at from their own perspective at things. But what's really instrumental and very, enlightening is in that situation, telling that guy for the first time, hey, just forget about the fact that you are this
HVAC professional. You got this business. It's really hard to do because really driven professionals are just ultra, ultra focused. Tony Robbins and everybody said you got to be focused, right? And these guys are winning at that. They're focused like you wouldn't believe, and they should be, and they're probably going to be successful for that. But you have to ask them to put that down for a second. It's got a nice little handle on it. You can pick it up anytime you want. If you get up, you know, you put your focus on that down for a second, and let's talk about your community, you know, and what your community needs. And there's other businesses in this community. They're not HVAC, and there's some competitors, of course, but then there's all the other businesses. Now, these restaurants, so let's say that they've determined that they want, you know, they're really focused on restaurant, HVAC, the professional, industrial, maybe, whatever. The people who own these restaurants, the people who manage them, the people who work in them, they all do other things in this community. They go to movies. They buy products and services from other people, not even closely related to HVAC. They have all of these things going on. And they all need it. They all need cool, and they all need warm, depending on what season it is. And they all need the things that make those things go to be working in proper order. So we've established that you could be really touching someone in your community through all kinds of different businesses. And that opens them up. So it's not, because what if you're thinking about it, if you're focused just on what you do, and I'm an HVAC and I got to go out and I got to get, you're going to automatically come up with ideas like, I got to get a flyer out to all the restaurants, you know, because that's where I want to work, and I got to figure out who, you know, for these chains, they're really difficult to work with. I got to figure out how to get to them because the local guy doesn't know anything about this. He's always got to go to corporate to blah, blah, blah. So you're focused on all those kinds of things. And you start to get into, it's like, you know, plaque buildup on your teeth or something. You don't even notice it. It's happening, and you have to go in and get it cleaned out. And this is what I do, is I clean out the plaque. They start thinking that if it's to be, it's up to me, you know, and I'm the only one who can make this happen. And it's just natural for people to do that. And that's when you stop thinking about anything that you can't do, anything that would depend on other people, that you only think about, well, I've got to go, and I've got to get my secretary to go down and get those flyers for those restaurants, and I've got to put advertising. I've heard about online stuff with Facebook, and I'm thinking maybe I can find a crowd. I can even advertise to just restaurant owners or managers on Facebook, and I got to try that out. And everybody gets into that situation at some point. And I'm always here to remind everybody, you got to put that down for a second and realize it's we. There's a lot of potential out there for other people, other businesses, to put you in front. So if you can triangulate on a business, Gina did it really well when she, my partner Gina Gaudio-Graves, when she, her cousin had a restaurant in Florida, still has it, and built an outdoor area specifically so it could be dog friendly. And Gina came up with the idea. Now, this is a restaurant, right? So restaurants are like, well, I've got to advertise. I've got to make sure I get to the right kinds of people. This restaurant decided, with Gina's help, who is also a massive ultra leveragist, who is the co-author of the Leverage Black Book, with me, she said, why don't we, there's a movie coming out. It was one of those Air Bud movies or whatever. It was with Golden Retrievers and stuff. And she said, why don't you tell everybody that you are a dog-friendly restaurant? And the reason for that is these movies are coming out, and there's a lot of really cool stuff, and she also did some demographic data for people who are not tourists who live in the area, so they're year-round, and they're not the seasonal stuff that would come through, the tourists. The people who live year-round, 80% of them own dogs, 80% in that area. She did some, it's like, holy crap, if you could make this a dog-friendly place. So she did, and then they built an outdoor area so that it was all cool with dogs, and then these movies came out, so they went to the movie theater and said, hey, let's give, since this is so close, we're a dog-friendly restaurant, we're in town, you're in town, blah, blah, blah. Locals like had 80% dog ownership, so you give them this coupon, which is good for a free entree or something like that, I can't remember what the deal was, and we'll give them this coupon, which is says good for half-price popcorn or something like that. When you go see the dog movie, we'll give this out at a restaurant. You give this out at the movie theater. Everybody who comes to the movie, right when it opens, everybody gets a free entree at the dog-friendly restaurant place, and it went crazy. And she was booked up for 90 straight days. 90 days that restaurant did not have a table available. And then they kept playing on that. So what in the world of a restaurant and a movie theater? Most people don't think like that. The movie theater thinks from specifically their terms, we've got to get get more people, more butts in the seats. And typically they just rely on the massive advertising that the studios do. So they don't. Nobody even thinks of a movie theater as being a point of leverage, like something like that could happen. But it certainly does. It can, and because they want it, they only make money on the popcorn. They don't make money on the movie at all. They don't make anything. So they only. That's why popcorn's so expensive at the movie theater. And the restaurant, you know, or the HVAC professional or whatever, is starting to now think in terms of leverage. When you start to think like a leveragist, you start to look around the world in a much, much different way than you typically would as a business owner who everything is up to me and my team, and that's it. And there's only us. And if we can't make this happen by ourselves with our advertising budget and our print and our, you know, sweat and everything else, then we are going to fail. We have to make it happen on our backs. When you start to switch that mindset over to a leverages thing, it's like, wait a minute, no. This is a community. We're part of a community. We keep the air clean. We do good things for people. We don't just install and repair, you know, stuff on the top of people's buildings, and that's all we are. That's not all we are. We're community members. We're coaches. We have kids. And we start to get them looking more in terms of how businesses all need similar things. And it's from the same community of people. You know, the managers who of restaurants who need to get filters changed on top of their whatever, who also watch movies and eat at restaurants and do all of these other things. So it's getting people to understand there's a lot of connectivity in the world that they typically don't allow themselves to see.
Cool, and totally makes sense. Awesome. Great advice, man. So, Jack, you've got something that's going to help my audience wrap their arms around using leverage a little bit. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we kind of put this and lots of other things in the Leverage Black Book, and that was just released in March, and so we're kind of on a book tour, and in it is everything that Gina, my partner, Gina Gaudio Graves, the JV Queen, and I talk about. We found that through all these years, of all the things that we've taught about, internet marketing, the SEO, social media, everything that we do, the thing that we talk about all the time, the thread that runs through it all is leverage. And so we really think like leverages, and we really look at every problem that comes up or an opportunity or whatever it might be in our business or in our clients' businesses from a leverage perspective. And we never take anything at face value, and we've done that because of the things that we talk about in the book. We look at it and go, wow, that does sound like a great opportunity, but we're always skeptical about whether or not we thought it completely through. Like, yeah, but can we do it faster? Can we do it bigger? Can we get where we want to go with this? And are we looking at the way of launching this that would have the biggest impact with the least amount of effort, the least amount of moving parts? Because the more moving parts, the more opportunity for things to break down. So we reassess everything. So we always think, if it's a good idea, it sounds like a good idea, we'll say it's a good idea, but we're immediately in the back of our minds thinking, all right, well, how can we be that restaurant that, you know, became dog-friendly and leveraged the entire movie-going audience for that great big blockbuster movie to have them bring us our clients instead of us feeling like we have to do it all. We have to put out the advertising. We have to get all of the people individually, shake their hands, and bring them into the restaurant ourselves, so to speak. So we teach people how to think like a leveragist, and it's all of those and many, many more things are in the Leverage Black Book.
Awesome, Jack. So if people wanted to get a hold of you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Just head to theleveragists.com. It's theleveragists.com, leveragists with an S.
Awesome, dude. Hey, man, this has been some great info. I know my peeps are going to get a lot out of it. I did, too. I really appreciate you, your insights. I mean, you're energetic, you're positive, and you bring a lot to the table. So, man, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.